Recording live from Jake's Sports and Spirits in the historic Rhino District of Denver, Colorado, it's the Pickaxe Podcast, presented by Denver Stiffs. Now, here's your host, Adam Mates.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Pickaxe Podcast, presented by Denver Stiffs. I am your host, Adam Mates, and I'm joined by a very special guest. He is the Director of Analytics for the Denver Nuggets, Mr. Tommy Balchettis.
How are you doing, Adam? Thanks for having me here, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, well, it's been a long time coming. Been trying to have you on the show for a bit. Our schedules have kind of not worked out because you've had a little bit of a busy summer, I would say.
Yeah. Right after Vegas, I ended up going back to Lithuania and getting married, honeymoon, all that jazz. The Olympics were happening, so it was a pretty fun summer as well.
You've had a very packed summer, and it's kind of funny because front office guys, they really don't have an off season. You have like a 3-week off season, and you've had a jam packed 3 weeks. So
yeah, you know, it was the best time to do it. Otherwise, you know, we wouldn't have done it.
I think you're gonna collapse around Christmas time this year.
Very possible. I'm ready to collapse right now, but it's fun.
That's cool. We're excited to have you here. We are recording actually live at Jake's Sports and Spirits, 3800 Walnut Street in historic Rhino District of Denver, Colorado. They are our sponsor. They're also home to Stiff's Night Out. Stay tuned because we're going to have some exciting news about our first Stiff's Night Out of the year that's going to be coming up here at tip-off of the Nugget season, which is surprisingly not that far away. Feels like because football season is starting, feels like it's a long way away, but it's right here, and it will be at Jake's. It's a great bar, great sports bar, cool location, cool decorations, great food, great beer list. So check it out, 3800 Walnut Street. So, Tommy, first thing about you, I don't know how much people actually know about you. You're somewhat famous. Do people stop you in the street and say, that's Tommy Balchettis?
The exact opposite of that.
No, but Stiff's readers definitely know who you are. I think Nate Timmons did a very cool profile on you a couple years back. And you do have a very interesting job and an interesting field, obviously, with basketball and with the Nuggets. But you actually grew up in Lithuania, which is a basketball hotbed, actually, like surprisingly.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah. Just tell me, what was it like growing up in Lithuania, and what is basketball like in Lithuania in particular?
It's a good question. I think Lithuania might be the only, if not, you know, one of the few countries where basketball is number one in terms of, you know, all the sports. I think Philippines is actually one of the countries.
Right.
Yeah, it's strange. But yeah, Lithuania is definitely, I want to say 90% of all the sports in terms of how people perceive sports, it has to be basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, we all play. Everybody has an opinion. We have, you know, we usually joke around, it's, you know, 3.5 million experts.
Really?
When we watch the game. Lithuania is obviously very well known for its basketball. I think we just dropped in the FIBA ratings, unfortunately.
Yeah, that was a rough showing.
Yeah, it was a rough showing. But, you know, it's okay. We stand behind our boys no matter what. But, yeah, you know, growing up, I played myself. It's kind of hard not to. I was a little taller growing up, so it was a simple
When you say
transition.
A little taller, because I want to know, you're 6'5", right?
Yeah,
I'm 6'5", we're about eye-to-eye level.
Right.
Are you tall for Lithuanian, or are Lithuanians all giants? Because I only know 7-foot Lithuanians. So.
I'm slightly above average in terms of height, yeah. But, you know, I'm not super tall. It's not like, you know, people walk around and kind of look at me funny. I'm slightly above average, but it's inevitable for Lithuanian, I guess, boys and girls, actually, to start playing at some point. It's actually a funny story how I started playing. So I went to Šarūnas Marčiulionis Basketball Academy. He's obviously a very famous Lithuanian.
Is he the second most famous Lithuanian basketball player?
After Sabonis, yeah, probably. For a while, he probably was the
most
famous one. I mean, he was the first one to play in the league.
Right.
And, you know, obviously a former Nugget as well, you know, so for some of the listeners. I went to his academy all 10 years. It's a 10-year academy. And the way I started playing was actually pretty funny. I was maybe 7 or 6 at that point. And me and my dad went to watch just a random basketball game in Vilnius, the city where I grew up in. And after the game, I just went downstairs to shoot around. Everybody was gone at that point. I was just shooting around on a side basket. And then Marčiulionis comes out randomly for some reason. He's like, hey, you know, show me what you got. I was like, oh, my God, this is Marčiulionis. So, I took the ball. I made a field goal attempt. He just swatted me straight into the.
So he was the original, because that's the thing now. Right? All these NBA players go to these little kid camps, and that's what they do. But he was doing this back in the 90s.
he just swatted me, and I'm like, all right. You know, I took the ball back, and actually I made the second shot, and he's like, you know what? You know, you should go ahead and, you know, try out, you know, whatever, a month from now. I'm like, all right, that's cool. So that's what happened. That's actually how I started playing.
Really?
Yeah. It's.
So he had like his own like a club team that's like elite Lithuanian club.
Yes, it's an academy basically. Okay. So, you know, in the States, obviously people go to school and play basketball at the same time. Back in Lithuania, you do kind of both things separately. So you go to your academic school in the morning, and then you go to your basketball school afterwards.
That's
maybe
crazy.
At 6 p.m. or something. So that's, you know, I ended up going to his academy.
So this is it practice? I mean, is it like practice?
It's all it's 2 hours of practice.
Practices like in Lithuania? I'm always curious. Is it drills nonstop?
So probably a little different now than back in my day, which is what, 20 years ago now, which is crazy. It's a bunch of drills.
Yeah.
It's shooting drills, it's passing drills. I think it's more fundamentals. You know, that's a popular thing to say in Europe. You know, people work on their fundamentals a little more.
Right.
And I think we do. And I think that still holds true. I think, you know, we work on our kind of physical level, you know, on our fitness level a little later in the development curve.
Gotcha.
We don't start at, you know, 8 or 9 or 10 years old. We kind of start doing that maybe at 16 or 15. And again, it might be totally different now. I'm just kind of saying, you know, when I was growing up, that's what it was. But I know people here, you know, in the States are a lot more athletic, and part of that is genetics, but at the same time, it's a different way to look at it.
So I'm going to butcher his name, even though I know who he is. Sure. Obviously know the whole history of it. But do you have a Sarunas Nuggets jersey?
Marcelonis. I do not, no, unfortunately. But I do have the, you know, the DVD, The Other Dream Team. You know, it was actually given to me by Sarunas. And, you know,
I think we need to crowdfund, you know, Stiffs need to crowdfund to get you one. That seems like something you should have.
You really should, yeah. It's and, like, you know, our assistant GM, Arturo Skrnišević, is actually on that, you know, in that movie as well. And, you know, he's probably the biggest legend. At this point, he actually is the biggest legend in Lithuania from a basketball perspective.
Really?
And I know Sabonis seems like it, and Marcinonis as well, but, you know, not a lot of people know that Arturas is actually the leading scorer in Lithuanian basketball history.
Wow.
And he's still young enough where young people still recognize him, and, you know, he's old enough where, you know, all the, you know, the older generation still knows who he is. So he is an absolute rock star back in Lithuania.
I got to be honest. So after, you know, I got to meet him a little bit in Vegas, and the as soon as I got home, one of the first things I did is I went on YouTube to try to find any highlights I had of Arturas.
Yeah.
So I was just like, what kind of player is he? He's super tall, and I kind of got a feel, but what kind of player was Arturas?
No, I actually wore number 12 in Arturas' honor my entire life.
That's cool.
It's really cool to actually be working with him. But, yeah, I mean, he was a three, kind of like a prototypical three guy. You know, now he's probably a 3-and-D.
Right.
But, I mean, he was a very good, you know, defensive player. But, you know, what he was really good at was just scoring the ball in many different ways. I mean, he had a lot of different ways to score the ball. He was an excellent shooter. You know, excellent kind of scorer around the basket, had a lot of stuff to him around the rim. And he was just, you know, he was just the right, he was a lot of people's favorite player because he was just fun to watch play. I mean, he wasn't one of those guys who just, you know, gets to the line a lot. He did, but at the same time, he was so just flashy about it. And he was
really
very athletic, yeah.
He had some showmanship to him.
He did. I mean, he was a very fun player to watch. And, you know, he still sometimes, you know, we shoot hoops, you know, one-on-one. Still beats me.
Really?
Yeah. Every once in a while, I kind of get my W's here and there, but he still beats me handedly.
You're an accomplished basketball player yourself, though.
Not really.
Maybe not to the same level as
not really, but thank
these
you.
Guys. But nice. You played at Harvard. That's a Division I school, an elite school. There's NBA players that come from Harvard.
True.
What was that experience like playing for Harvard? First of all, did you play all 4 years?
No, I didn't. So what happened was, you know, I was recruited out of high school to do it. I actually had a few pretty decent D1 offers playing in high school, but I had a heart condition that actually ended up kind of preventing me from playing full time.
Yeah.
And, you know, Harvard was a choice of mine just because, you know, if you don't end up being a basketball player, you know, end up actually getting a great, great education. So out of all the choices, it was a fairly easy choice.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I didn't end up actually playing all 4 years, but just because I thought that, you know, at some point it's almost unfair to your teammates and your coaching staff. You know, if you can't go 100% all the time, it's almost like, you know, occupying a roster spot, and just
right.
I didn't want to have that hanging over my head if I want to go and shoot around. around. Maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I take it easy. It kind of started messing with my head a little bit, so I decided to call it quits. But it was one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life.
Was quitting basketball.
Yeah, quitting basketball.
Really? Really?
Yeah.
What was basketball like at Harvard? Because obviously it's an incredibly difficult school, and I don't imagine that's a school where you have somebody doing your homework for you because you're on the basketball team. So.
No. I mean, and when I was coming in, I mean, Tommy Amaker wasn't the coach yet. I don't know how it is right now, but, you know, when I was coming in, basketball certainly helped, and, you know, I'm not going to say that it didn't, but you still had to have, you know, some sort of a baseline of grades and SAT scores and things like that. So getting in was, it wasn't easy. It was easier because I was a basketball player.
You don't have to sell us on going to Harvard. We get it, Tommy.
No. But you know what I mean.
You're smarter than all of us.
No, that is completely false. I hope I'm on record saying that.
But what's the basketball like, you know, some of these D1s, I know that the time commitment is just insane. And,
yeah.
And is it the same way there where your entire day is school and basketball and nothing else?
You know, I don't really necessarily have anything to compare it to.
Yeah.
You know, I know some of my best friends played, you know, at schools that are higher in terms of basketball. So I know that their days were completely planned. You know, they had people helping them with the homework and things like
right.
that. We didn't have that. We still had to do all of our stuff. We could still choose to go to easier classes if we wanted to. But, you know, a lot of basketball players who didn't end up playing professionally, you know, they were still regular students, and a lot of people just had no idea who they were. So it was, when I was coming in, Harvard wasn't Harvard. I mean, right now, apparently Harvard is actually a pretty decent basketball school.
Right.
With Tommy Amaker, you know, they were ranked, you know, a little while ago, but when I was coming in, it was still kind of like a, you know, mid to lower D1 school.
You classed up the program.
I think me quitting was one of the best things that happened to that team.
There you go. Well, let's move on to analytics because you have such an interesting job. You're director of analytics now for the Denver Nuggets. And, you know, first of all, I want to ask, are you the first person, because analytics is so new.
Sure.
It's kind of a new term. It's a new idea using numbers in basketball.
Right.
Are you the first person to hold an analytics title with the Denver Nuggets? Do you know?
In terms of title, I think I might be one of the first ones. I know that there were people before me who did that type of work. Obviously,
right.
Dean Oliver was there. You know, he's
right.
he's considered one of the grandfathers of, you know, the whole movement.
Right.
And I know there were a few assistant coaches and people in the front office who did analytics type of work. I don't think they necessarily had the title of analytics. So I think I might be the first one to actually have it. But in terms of work, I don't think I'm the first one.
And how new is the field? So I know a lot of teams, first of all, a lot of teams I know have a department. Do you know, does every team have somebody full-time working on analytics? Is that something you know or something you assume?
I think I assume, and, you know, I think I know that most of them at this point have at least a few people working on numbers. And, you know, it's not always that they're actually called, you know, basketball analysts
right.
or analytics director or something like that, but I know there are people who are, you know, it's part of their duties, but perhaps to actually do a little more analytics type of work. But, you know, a few folks, you know, who I've talked to on different teams, you know, they told me that, hey, you know, I'm also doing analytics even though my title is X or something like that. But again, you know, there's certain teams that are, you know, on both extremes. Some teams have, you know, five or six programmers on their staff who only do analytics. You know, other teams actually have, you know, fewer people or maybe none.
Right.
I think we're at a good balance right now with the Nuggets.
I find it so interesting because, you know, obviously I'm into analytics. So I think most of the listeners know I write for Nylon Calculus. There's a lot of analytics in my writing and this and that, but I find it so interesting how much organizations are very secretive about their analytics department.
Yeah.
It's almost like an NBA, you know, Cold War, or so to speak, just so that people are working on big projects and they won't share or leak any of the information.
Yeah.
Is that kind of a thing? Is that how it works with teams, or are you interacting a lot with
no,
other analytics
No,
departments?
Come to think about it, I think this podcast is over. I think we should end it right now. It's a secretive field, I would say. You know, I know a bunch of people in the analytics field around the league, and you know, even though we share some kind of high level ideas,
right.
there's still a lot of a lot that's kind of under the surface. So yeah, it's pretty secretive.
What tools are you working with usually in your day to day stuff? I know everybody has access to NBA.com's
right.
sport view tools, but that's
sure.
like a sampler platter, right? Of sports views full package.
Yeah. There, you know, we definitely have a bunch of different resources. I mean, yeah, we're definitely not above, you know, using, you know, what's out there available
right.
to the public. It's always about how you analyze the information, not exactly what you have. But we do have certain data that may not be available to the public. So you know, there are many different ways. And again, it's there may be, you know, three or four, I would say, resources that, you know, maybe regular fans are, don't have access to. But, you know, maybe naming them is probably not the best idea.
Right, of course. Yeah, I gotcha. And who do you work with primarily? Are you is it a little bit of everybody? Are you mostly working with the coaching staff, with the front office?
Mostly with the front office, absolutely. I mean, I was hired by Tim Connolly, and you know, Arturis was also instrumental in hiring me. So it's basically front office. I do work with the coaching staff, whether on it kind of in the beginning of the season when we decide what we're going to do for the year. You know, I try to automate all those reports for them, and every once in a while there's an ad hoc project that, you know, that the coaches throw my way. But it's mostly with the front office, and it really depends, you know, the period in the season that we're in.
Right.
You know, whether it's the draft, whether it's trade deadline and things like that, it still has to ends up being around 80% front office and 20% coaching staff.
How does your brain work? Because I consider myself an analytics guy. That's why he went to Harvard. No, I'm an analytics guy, and I think my brain is like 95% basketball, 5% analytics. In that, all of my analytics ideas come from watching film and thinking like, I get an idea. You know, this guy doesn't seem to be defending transition well. So I go into the data and try to solve that. Is it the same way with you? Because I know some people will mine data and they'll see an anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll say, well, let me dig deeper in this. Which one would you characterize yourself as?
Right. It's the top-down versus bottom-up approach. Right?
Okay, sure.
It really is.
Okay.
that's my finance background a little bit. No, you know, honestly, I can't tell you which one I prefer. I end up actually doing both.
Okay.
You know, I would say maybe slight edge towards actually bottom up, where I actually look at the entirety of the data that we have, and, you know, maybe finding some certain patterns, and like, oh, I wonder if that's true.
Right.
Then I end up watching film. They're like, you know what? I actually don't think that that's true, or maybe there's something different going on. But every once in a while, I'd say, you know, perhaps as often as I watch the game and I realize that maybe we're not doing something right. I'm not smart enough as the coaches. I mean, I'm not even on the same level. But sometimes I see something that I think it's worth exploring, and I end up running a few numbers on it, and, you know, perhaps the numbers start showing me something. Then I bring it up with the coaching staff, and, you know, more often than not, they have ideas about what's going on, and every once in a while they're surprised, which is a good thing.
I think the best basketball minds and the best analytics minds or advanced stats minds both say the same things but speak different languages.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always that's almost like a litmus test for how well a person knows basketball, is if I throw a stat at them and they immediately see the angles as it pertains to basketball.
Sure.
And is that, you know, when you're taking things to guys like, you know, Tim Connolly or Michael Malone or things like this, is there ever a breakdown just in communication because you are speaking two different languages? Is that a difficulty trying to communicate numbers to a basketball guy?
Sure. So I think, you know, taking a step back, I mean, I consider myself a basketball guy. I mean, analytics is an additional thing that, you know, ended up being kind of, you know, my role in the front office. But, you know, growing up playing basketball for so long, you know, that was very, I think, important to where I am right now. And when Tim hired me, you know, it's a whole story. You know, Tim has told the story, I think, on the Stips podcast one time. But, you know, we met in Moscow when I was there when I was working for NBA London. And he hired me as a basketball guy. We spoke about my experiences, you know, working in finance and all that stuff. So, I mean, that definitely...
You clearly have numbers. Yeah. You clearly know numbers.
Right. And you know, it's funny because we didn't even talk analytics at all with him in Moscow. I mean, we just hung out there for, you know, 3 or 4 days. And he hired me as a basketball guy, just working for him in the front office. And when he asked me, you know, what kind of work I want to do, or what my title, you know, what I wanted my title to be, I told him, how about, you know, manager, director of analytics? He's like, oh, that's awesome. Yeah, we'll do analytics. I had no idea. So, you know, I consider myself a kind of a basketball guy first, and analytics second. And, you know, I just recently hired actually a guy to work for me. So now analytics has, you know, two people.
Awesome.
Which is
the
cool.
The department is growing.
Yeah. Chris Feller, very smart, very ambitious guy. You know, and I love the guy. And, he's also a basketball guy. I mean, he's also analytically inclined.
Right.
But, you know, he's first and foremost a basketball guy. So I think it's very important to have that balance. And when I talk to Coach Malone, when I talk to Tim, I think they're pretty comfortable at this point talking to me, because I try to put everything in basketball terms.
Right.
And I think they understand that I know basketball enough.
Right.
And, you know, when I try to communicate, I mean, I want to say 80% of my work really is to communicate the data, you know, in the right way. And not because they wouldn't understand it. They definitely would. It's just, you know, saving them time and giving them, you know, the right information
in,
you know, the most simplest terms possible.
Right.
I don't want to overwhelm anybody.
Would you say, talked to a lot of analytics people just through different, you know, different contexts. When having it seems like that's kind of a thing a lot of them say is that they're all basketball people first, numbers guys second. Do you think, in your experience, is that the case with most people working in analytics? Not just for, you know, the people that you know in the NBA, but maybe in college basketball and in other sports and things. They know the sport first and the numbers second?
Not always. I do think that, you know, I meet more kind of basketball people first and then analytics second. You know, I meet enough of those people, but... You know, every once in a while, and it's not uncommon for me to meet somebody who maybe had a different type of background. They didn't necessarily play.
Right.
You know, they kind of come from a different background and become a basketball guy in the process.
Right.
So there's enough of those people out there. Yeah.
What about, this is kind of a, like a, this is like a stock question to ask a director of analytics.
Please.
So this is maybe my worst question, but it's kind
right.
of fun. Do you, are there any like specific numbers or stats that you like more than others, or any analytics concepts that maybe you gravitate towards, you find the most interesting or the most applicable?
You know, with us, well, first of all, you know, box score is, you know, I think everybody's moving away from the traditional box score stats. I feel like, you know,
rebounds per game.
Right,
and,
right.
Yeah.
Those are a little more interesting, perhaps, for the casual fan, you know, or maybe fantasy and things like that. I think, you know, we're trying to look at, you know, myself, I try to look at on-off stats quite a bit, and just to see how the team is performing when certain guys are on the floor, when, you know, two guys are on the floor, or three guys are on
right.
the floor, you know, how do we look and kind of what's happening. I think that might be a little more telling.
Right.
Because if you look at, you know, say Nikola's stats, you know, they're good, but they're not mind-blowing. But if you look at his on-off stats, you know, all of a sudden he looks like an amazing player. I think, you know, that distinction is pretty important. And we also, you know, as everybody probably knows, we try to play fast in Denver.
Right.
It's very important. So, you know, I've developed a kind of like an in-house way to look at how fast we're playing and how well we're playing when we play fast. It's you know, it's like a collection of different categories. So that's something that we develop internally that we try to track as well.
Ah, that's really cool. How much? I know another growing field in analytics is, you know, biometrics or trying to monitor guys' sleep patterns and their how much energy they use during a game.
Sure.
Is that a part of your department right now, or is that something that you don't really tap into too much?
I'm involved. You know, we have our strength and conditioning guys kind of, you know, taking over, you know, that type of that part of the. Of the equation,
right.
But you know, if it's data, if it's numbers, I'm involved as well. So it's kind of like a joint process with me and those guys.
I think that area in particular is such a fascinating one because there is an issue of privacy with that. Where
sure, yeah.
You know, if you're a player that's about to be traded or this or that, and you're, you know, you obviously have your physical and these baseline
right.
things, but if some of these scans, you know, or the things they talk about, you can reveal future injuries or things like a guy not getting paid because he has weak tibias or something. You know, like,
sure.
It's I think it's an interesting field. We'll have some interesting topics of discussion in the next 5, 10
right.
years.
Right, right. It's happening. But, I mean, we'll see how the league and the Players Association deals with it. Yeah.
Do you ever work directly with any players about numbers? Do they ever ask you? Do you ever bring anything to them?
I try not to, honestly. You know, a lot of our guys have so many people in their ear all the time, and you know, I try to go through the coaches.
Right.
Always try to do that. You know, first, you know, every once in a while, I mean, you know, we're all kind of there, so
yeah.
it's, you know, it's kind of hard not to, you know, say certain things. I mean, you know, Will Barton was one of the best transition guys last year, and you
right.
know, I'm sure he'd like to hear that every once in a while.
Right.
But you know, I try not to go direct with the guys and kind of tell them because there may be a reason why we're seeing certain things. Maybe the coach wants them to do certain things.
Right.
You know, say like, oh, you know, you're not shooting mid ranges enough. That may actually, you know, that's hopefully and probably. Usually ends up being, you know, what the coaches want
right.
them to do. So, you know, I try to go through the coaches.
Gotcha. So it sounds like even if you have ideas, it's always going through Malone, and Malone can filter out
right.
how he
Our
wants to run the system. What's
you know, Micah, Wes, Ryan, all those guys. You know, try to go that way.
I love Micah, by the way. Two summers in a row now, I've gotten to interview him and talk to him at Summer League.
Yeah, no, they're all the best. I mean, we love our coaching staff. I mean, they're good dudes.
Wow. What does Tim Connolly think of analytics? Is he, first of all, is he an analytics guy as in, like, you give him a spreadsheet and he goes home and, like, looks through it? Or is he a guy that lets you do that and then you explain it to him?
You know, he has a very healthy balance, I think,
okay.
between kind of believing analytics and understanding the
right.
context.
Right.
And I think, you know, both him and I share that. And I think that's the reason why, you know, we work well together is because we both understand that it's, you know, it's a very popular thing to say. It's not the end-all solution.
Right.
It's just a tool in your toolbox. I mean, I've heard that so many times now. But it is true. And Tim understands that. And I think he's on record even saying that. And I like that because, you know, more often than not, I mean, I try to look at the right numbers, you know, as far as I think that they are right. And I try to understand why certain things are happening. And we can have a healthy discussion about it. But, I mean, we're never going to let the numbers dictate, you know, 100% of our decision making. I think, you know, it gives us the direction to which we can debate further.
There was like a lot of controversy in the early years, like 2 years ago, three years ago, where people hated analytics. They're useful. You know, Charles Barkley's been very vocal.
Sure.
And I think it's the idea of analytics that you just explained. The
right.
The like this number says this guy's a bad rim protector, therefore he's a bad rim protector.
Right, right.
When really I think all numbers are, well, that's interesting. What are the reasons? If the only explanation you have for something is a number, you probably don't understand that concept.
Sure.
But
yeah.
If that number pointed you, and then you look at the film and you say, okay, right. Here's what's going on. This is why he's struggling.
Right. And you know, and again, I think we struck a pretty good balance with the Nuggets. We actually have another analytics arm within KSC, our parent company. You know, it's run by Brett Baer. Sandy Wheel is the director there. Lade Mashro, who you know from Nylon Calculus. I mean, very smart guys, very helpful. Basically, what they do is they support all the KSC teams with a kind of, you know, research type, kind of like a more kind of macro type of projects,
right.
And you know, and other additional things that we may necessarily use day to day. So that's something that, you know, that they do, that they help us, and they're very smart. You know, their stuff is very, very high quality. And you know, they help us with software purchasing and, you know, doing all these kind of additional things that if we need additional analytics support, you know, those guys are there for us. So I think, you know, we're pretty set with our analytics knowledge, and which is really good. But you know, it kind of lets me and Chris do more Nugget specific work,
right?
And you know, the stuff that those guys do, it's a little less kind of has to do with day to day stuff. That's a little more on me and Chris. Again, you know, to answer the question, you know, it's a long story short. I mean, I think we have a very healthy understanding, kind of what's too much,
right.
And you know, what's not enough,
right?
And at the same time, I understand the debate why analytics may be, you know, a little too much, you know,
sure.
Especially from a perspective of an older, you know, older player, more old school type of mind, just
right.
Because you know. There are a ton of things that analytics can't quantify, and
right.
we get that. I mean, I understand
right.
that. I'm never going to try, you know, to quantify everything,
right.
Because there's still the magic of the sport, right? I mean, you still have to understand that certain things happen for a reason, and certain things, you know, things like chemistry, things like, you know, chemistry between the coach and the player. Those things we can quantify, and that's okay. But we try to quantify as much as possible, and then have a spirited and informative discussion of the things that we can quantify.
Right. Right. I'm always curious with people in front offices how much the work they do is big picture stuff. Because for me, the reason I like analytics, the reason I find them fascinating,
mm-hmm.
and like I said, I'm 95% basketball, I write about just basketball. Every
right.
now and then I get into the numbers and I have fun with it. But the reason I like the numbers is because I'm a person that philosophically, I want to solve basketball. I know it's an unsolvable thing,
sure.
but I like... You know, I played lower-level basketball in college, and I coach and does these things. Every year, I feel like I learn something new about the game, you know, like a new idea. And analytics is a thing, is a tool that helps me learn things about the game that I don't think I would have been led to had I not had the questions that arose from analytics. So that's
sure.
That's the way... I know that there's a lot of... You talked about projects and, you know, the draft and going to the numbers for this and stuff, but for me, my favorite part of analytics is... You know, what is the trade-off? There's this trade-off between offensive rebounding and transition defense.
Mm.
Something I probably would have never thought about, or at least not thought about in this way,
sure.
had it not been presented to me in a numbers kind of way, where
right.
you can kind of see that trade-off. So
yeah, but instinctually, you can understand that there's a connection.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
But then
yeah.
also, you know, analytics sometimes tells you how big the connection is, or, you know, how small it is. And, you know,
sometimes reveal things that aren't as intuitive. That one, I think it is intuitive,
because, sure.
yeah, you attack the glass, you're going to knock
right,
it back.
Right,
but
right.
there are some things that are sometimes less intuitive that... Corner three-pointers don't actually give up. There's not a correlation to shooting corner threes and giving up transition baskets. I think I would have thought that was true just
sure.
because you're the deepest position.
Right.
So there are certain things. That's just a terrible example, actually. There's much more interesting examples.
Right.
But
no,
things
it's
of that nature
yeah.
where I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that
right.
otherwise. But how inquisitive and receptive is Coach Malone to analytics? I know he talks in press conferences. He's such a great interview, by the way, in press conferences. But I know in press conferences he'll always use advanced stats.
Mm-hmm.
He won't just say, you know, we're a slow-paced team or this or that. He'll say, we get a lot of transition baskets, or we get a lot of points in the paint, or, you know, so-and-so is shooting such-and-such outside the paint, but this much inside. And those are advanced stats. They might be relatively basic.
You can say that, yeah. But basic advanced.
Right, basic advanced. Mid-level stats.
Yeah.
How inquisitive is he about this type of stuff?
He's pretty inquisitive. I found it very easy to work with Coach Malone. He has been a part of so many kind of really good and winning organizations, having been, with Golden State and, all these other teams, and, with New Orleans when they went pretty far. He has his philosophies, and, he's also very willing to adapt and kind of learn new things. And I think he thinks in numbers more often than not, and it's been very simple to communicate with him. I mean, every time, I have an idea, and if I get a chance to actually, explain it to him, he gets it quickly. He may have different ideas, which is totally okay.
Right.
But I've never had a situation where I had to, explain something to him for longer than, 20 seconds.
Right,
he gets
right.
it immediately, and, he acts on it whether he does or he doesn't. At least he understands what's going on.
That's kind of been my experience with him, too. Obviously, you're much, much more intimately involved with the inner workings of the team, but just in interviewing and post games, I mentioned earlier about how some guys you throw out a stat and it confuses them. He's
sure.
a guy that sees all angles, more angles than I see, because
yeah,
I'll say, here's something I noticed, you guys are struggling at this, and he'll say, well, here's five possible reasons that's happening, and it's always so interesting, because it's, like I said, it's different languages, but they're talking about the same thing. He's the guy that maybe he doesn't speak in just numbers, but he at least understands the numbers very quickly and sees
it's
all.
It's very hard to surprise him. I'm going to say that.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes, when you talk to certain coaches, like, oh, wow, I didn't know. Not the coaches on our staff right now.
Right.
just in general, but, when you talk to Coach Malone and, some of the other guys in our system, they're like, oh, yeah, no, we know that. We know. And there's a reason why we're doing it, or yes, we're working on that.
Gotcha.
So it's never been something that, they were wowed by.
I'm gonna give myself a challenge now to surprise him with a question at practice.
Go ahead.
I'm gonna try it now. I'm
interested to see that.
It won't work. he's a very, very, he's a good interview. Very, very smart dude.
Yeah.
What do you think? Do you think analytics departments are going to continue to grow over the next 5-10 years? Do you think this is a field that's gonna, you're gonna have 10 people on staff in analytics here in 10 years?
Good question. I think it's the more data we have, there's naturally more data to analyze. So I think, and the data is only growing. We were talking about biometrics before. I mean, that part is growing as well. So I think there's still going to be a little bit of growth going on, but I think at some point it's going to look like an S-curve a little bit. It's going to taper off. I don't see kind of a sustained growth in the field, but there's still some growing left to do. At least that's what I think.
Okay. A lot of that computing power, too, you think? I mean, like...
I think there's going to be almost like a natural ceiling to it, just because at some point we'll have so much of it, and there are only so many insights you can get from it at some point. And I think it's almost like we're almost seeing that now a little bit.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, when you see, certain things work very well and other things don't. And I mean, analytics have helped us to identify what those things are.
Right.
And there's still more learning to do, so that's why I think, it's going to keep growing a little bit. But I'm seeing kind of like the curving of the S-curve.
Right, right.
That makes sense.
Gotcha.
A little bit.
No, totally.
But I can be wrong, but that's kind of like what I'm seeing right now.
Gotcha. What do you think? What is the best part of the job? I mean, everybody wants to work in sports. Today, you're working in sport. You're working for an NBA team. What's the coolest part of your job where you sit back and you're like,
man,
this is pretty good.
Just being around basketball, honestly. I mean, it's such an easy and BS answer, but it really is. I mean, it's just being around the sport that I absolutely love. I mean, I have no other sport in my mind that occupy more than like 3% of my brain power. I mean, I don't watch soccer. I'm from Europe, and I don't watch soccer. I mean, my wife knows everything about, different sports. I mean, she watches.
Really?
My wife's dad,
and she has to explain it to you, then.
I know how those sports are played.
Okay.
And, I love playing tennis. I love playing, soccer, ping pong, like all these different sports. I love playing them.
Yeah.
But I can't watch them just because I just don't have the interest level. My wife's dad is a big, big sports guy. He watched every single sport in the Olympics. I remember we were playing Spain. Lithuania was playing Spain in basketball, and there was a what do you call it? I mean, it's It's like when really strong dudes gonna keep lifting stuff. What is it? Just like heavy lifting?
That's okay. Yeah, weight lifting. I don't know.
Weightlifting. Yeah, that shows you how much I know. Yeah, yeah. It was like a weightlifting thing. You know, it was the Olympics, and her dad just kept like jumping back and forth from the game to the weightlifting. I'm like, Jesus, this is just like awful for me. Yeah. All I want to do is just watch the Lithuania Spain. We were like getting killed. We were like down 35. It was one of the worst. I still want to watch that game. Right. And he just kept jumping back and forth to weightlifting. I'm like, this is hell for me.
I feel like Lithuanians are always in the strongest man competition.
Yeah,
too,
actually, got the bronze this year.
Really, it's like Iceland is
got the bronze.
Good.
Strong dudes. Yeah, but again, it's being around basketball, being around the sport that I grew up, watching and playing, and also, another really cool part. I mean, this is gonna sound like, embellishment, but I mean, the guys that I work with, we're very friendly. We're actually a very tight knit group. I mean, those guys came to my wedding. They came to Lithuania for a wedding, which is crazy. So yeah, I love spending time with those guys. I mean, they're fun guys to be around.
That's so important, I think, in any field. Just the camaraderie, especially in this field where there's pressure.
Oh, the camaraderie is real. That I can tell you.
That's phenomenal. That's really good.
We're going to get back to Tommy Balchettis in just a moment, but I want to tell you about the sponsor of the show who makes this show possible, WashClubDenver.com. Wash Club Denver is a brand new laundry, full-service laundry company that offers on-demand pickup and delivery of your laundry. Here's how it works. You go to WashClubDenver.com or download the Wash Club app. They have their own app. And you just enter in what your address and what you need done, how much laundry you have, and they'll take care of the rest. They actually come to your house and pick up your laundry. They take it to their state-of-the-art facility and wash it for you. If it's dry cleaning, whether it's regular laundry, whatever, they do it all. And they'll bring it back to you within 24 hours, deliver it right to your doorstep. Incredible service. This is the future of laundry, if you ask me. And last week, somebody asked me what it means to have a state-of-the-art facility, and I had to ask them. And turns out it's an energy-efficient and water-efficient laundry facility. So they actually use about one-third of the water that you would use to wash your own laundry. So it's also a green company. They serve the entire metro area, all the way from Highlands Ranch down in the south up to Thornton, Westminster, Commerce City in the north. Pretty much everywhere, everywhere inside the metro area. And they're big fans of the show that if you use the promo code STIFFS, STIFFS, you get 25% off. How cool is that? We have our own promo code. So give them a try. I actually hear that people have been using it. Listeners of the show have been using the promo code STIFFS, which is awesome. And hit me up on Twitter on DenverStiffs.com. If you've used the company, let me know how it went. Give me a review of the company. I want to know how our sponsors are doing. Again, that's WashClubDenver.com or the Wash Club app.
I actually want to go back to the Olympics here for a second.
Sure.
And not about basketball. I do find it interesting that you said that all these other sports don't interest you, because I'm the exact same way. Like football, I'm so out on football. Like the last 5 years, my interest in football has just gone downhill. And it's funny because the Broncos won a championship. That's
my
team.
Yeah.
I kind of was excited.
Right.
Not that excited.
I was excited.
Yeah.
It's cool to live in a city where that happens.
Exactly. Right, that's what it is. It's cool to see all of your friends happy. Yeah. That was really what it comes down to. But I'm kind of out on it, too. But the Olympics, I was surprised at how much I got into the Olympics.
Okay.
You had a lot of stuff going on, of course. You were around the world.
Yeah, my honeymoon. Yeah.
But did you watch any Olympics other than weightlifting and basketball?
Just being force-fed weightlifting? A little bit. God, I mean, really, not enough for sure. And again, my wife's sister, actually, she's a big sports journalist back in Lithuania.
So she
watched everything, so she would just keep me up to date. It really is very interesting, and definitely not trying to say that it's not. Just for me, I mean, I'm so into basketball that it's almost impossible for me to really be interested or excited about another sport. So I didn't really watch anything else.
You say you played, you'll play other sports,
right,
just recreationally.
Yeah.
Like, is there any other sports that you play somewhat regularly?
I try to play tennis as much as possible.
Yeah, I can
and
see
just
that.
Some driving range golf, but I'm terrible, and I just started doing it, and it's fun.
I haven't crossed over to golf yet.
I said when I turn 30,
I'm going to go.
Driving range.
Yeah, driving range. That's true. That is different.
Yeah.
That's like kind of like putt-putt.
Tennis
almost.
Is probably my second favorite sport to play for sure. Watching again, it's like, eh.
Yeah, who can watch tennis? I'd say watching golf, I don't understand those people either.
I couldn't.
I'm going to move to ask you about international basketball here, because I find it so fascinating. Obviously, the 2014 lost.
I don't remember who. That was That was a really fun day for me.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. No, the 2014 lost, and there was a crisis of USA basketball, right, yeah. And everything. And it's been really interesting to watch international basketball grow with Spain and Argentina, Lithuania, of course, and some of these great teams. Most recently, it looks like the U.S. has pulled away again a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you think, is international basketball catching up? And not just in Olympics, anything can happen.
Right.
But I'm really more curious about just the development process of international basketball and, just the training facilities and the interest in these countries. Is basketball growing in Europe the way it's perceived?
From what I see, I would say yes. There's a lot more focus that's placed on nutrition and the athletes' bodies and the skill development. And again, growing up for me, we didn't have individual coaches who work on our skill development. But right now, I'm seeing one of my good friends that I played with growing up. He's an individual skills coach right now, working with a bunch of young players as well as veteran players actually back in Europe. So that's something that wasn't commonplace when I was growing up, but right now it actually exists. And I have a feeling it's the same way across Europe, not just in Lithuania. So in that regard, yes, I would say there's a lot more growth going on. We see a bunch of international players getting drafted, a bunch of international players kind of towards the end of their career actually making a jump to the NBA, and I think that's going to continue happening.
And here's an interesting one for you, because there was, I think, 110 international players in the NBA 2 years ago, and last year there was like 107 or something like that.
Sure.
I think it went down. It was the first time in a while that it went down, but not a lot. I mean, it was basically the exact same.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think in 5-10 years time, is that number going to be 150, or do you think maybe we're at like something of a critical mass of international players?
Good question. I think there's a little bit of a cushion between the U.S. and then Europe still, or just the rest of the world, not necessarily Europe. I mean,
right.
We saw what Australia did in the Olympics,
right?
And other countries. I think there's still a little bit of catching up to do, so it wouldn't surprise me if there's a little more growth in terms of maybe more players in the league. But you're right. I mean, I feel like we're pretty close to the critical point, in my opinion. There's still going to be the majority of NBA players are still going to have gone through the college and the AAU process here in the States.
One of the things I'm really interested in is basketball in Africa. So many people in Africa.
Sure.
And what's the infrastructure? If the infrastructure arrives there, I just think there's so much potential for opening up the game to a whole new prospects. And I'm so fascinated by that. And it was interesting that you mentioned training and that kind of being a new field in Europe, because to me, it's almost taken for granted out here. There's, even in Colorado, which is not a hotbed, we have 3 players in the NBA from Colorado, I think, right now. But there's still every city has their own guy that's like the training guy, and their camps and this and that. And people pay big money for that.
Sure. There's reasonable returns if you make it big.
That's true. If you make it, for the 2 or 3 guys that make it to the NBA, to pay that back.
Right.
No, that's interesting. And what are some of the big, I know in Europe, some of the big hotbeds for hoops are, the ex-Yugoslavian countries like Croatia, Serbia, Bosnia, Lithuania, I'm sure, is also the tops.
the tops them all. We're okay.
What are some other ones, some other countries where basketball, maybe not even that it's the best, but just that's the most popular
I think, there's certain, you're right, the usual suspects are always going to be there, the ex-Yugoslavian countries, some of the Baltic states as well, namely Lithuania and Latvia. But it's obviously growing in Australia. We see more and more players play in the league, and as a team they were very good in Rio now.
Why is Australia? Is there a story behind that? Do you know of?
I don't know.
Why is Australia so good at basketball?
I think it just took a few guys to make it big, and then it kind of starts the whole domino effect, and that's what happens. But Spain and France have always been good, and I'm sure they're going to continue being good. I mean, we have Juancho.
Right.
He's going to be the next big thing. Hopefully,
for us
and for Spain.
I love that guy.
Yeah,
a lot of fun.
I mean, last year, me and myself and Rafael, our international scout. I mean, we were at U20s. We're fortunate to be there, and we saw him play for the first time. But I mean, we knew of him a little bit, but we saw him play.
Yeah.
He stood out, and we're very happy that he's donning the Nuggets uniform now. I mean, he's a heck of a guy, and hopefully he'll be a good player, along with all the other rookies that we got.
I love that the Nuggets are so international. I just think I might be the only one, but I think.
I hope there are more people like you, Adam.
You know, I think we're more popular in Europe than we are, you know, than we are in Colorado.
We'll be in London. You know, we'll see how many people come out. I'm sure there's going to be a healthy Serbian crowd there.
I'm very curious to see what the fans are like there. They skew more Indiana or they skew more Denver. I'm guessing we have much more NBA players from Europe. So
Well, I mean, hopefully. I mean, I know that there are healthy populations living in the UK,
right?
Both from ex-Yugoslavian countries, and we have a Bosnian and Serbian on our team. So hopefully, and obviously, Juancho being from Spain.
That game's on my birthday, so I might have to fly out. The wife and I might fly out to London.
Probably not. Hey,
we'll
why not?
We'll have like a 2-month-old baby at the time. I don't think it'll
work. That's a tough one.
Last one before we go to a fun little top five list, but I want to ask you, to what extent is the game of basketball evolving? To what extent do you think the game is changing? Because if you watch the game in the 80s, it's almost like a different sport, to be honest with you. The defense is different. They fast break. They play fast.
Right.
It's different than the 90s, which is different than the 2000s, different than today. Do you see the game as something that's constantly changing, or do you think it's the changes are drastically overstated?
I don't think they're drastically overstated. I think it changes, for sure. I mean, certain things become more important as... And again, tying into analytics, I mean, analytics probably uncovered a few things that end up being, more important. You know, back in the day, long twos were a little more commonplace. Today, they're not because they've been disproven as the best way to make shots. At the same time, we have certain, not anomalies, but let's say, generous exceptions from the rule, certain players in the league who actually can make those twos.
Right.
So I think, analytics helps to uncover certain things. And, we see the corner three becoming a lot more important. We see just the three in general. I think Kirk Goldsberry did research over the last, I don't know how many, maybe 30 years, in terms of how three-point shots have become a lot more important in the way we play today.
Right.
And you're seeing, all the rage that small ball today, even though I think there's still ways to win, even if you don't necessarily have a small ball unit out there. So it is changing, and you have to continue to understand how the game is being played. And I think it's going to continue changing, but I mean, again, certain trends tend to come back every once in a while, like beards now, in Colorado. I feel like that's going to happen in the league as well.
That's how it is.
That's how it is. Yeah. So
I can't wait to see what 80s trends are going to come back to the NBA.
Yeah, maybe the mullet.
Oh, jeez.
I'm going to grow it out and see if that comes back.
Yeah. You'll be the trendsetter.
Why not?
Here in Denver's becoming more and more hipster. I think you'll blend right in.
Yeah,
I don't even think people will know you're starting to grow
a mustache, though. I can't grow a mustache.
A lot of fun, really, really fun podcast. Really appreciate you coming on. I'm going to give you a top five. I like to do this with our guests and give them all a top five list that they have to create. It has nothing to do with basketball.
Sure.
Just to kind of get to a little bit of a sense of your personality and your likes and dislikes.
Mm-hmm.
You're an international man of mystery. You've been around the world. You went to Harvard. You just went on a honeymoon that took you to exotic locations around the globe.
Yeah.
So I want top five destinations that you have been to around the globe. Now, this doesn't have to be cities. It could be, a park or a place or what have you.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. Some people are going to think I'm crazy, but I loved Istanbul a lot.
Okay.
I really, really did.
I hear that from a lot. I don't think that's crazy. Yeah, that's always considered.
Some people are like, it's a little too busy. It's a little something, certain things don't work there. I think the structure, the governmental structure is not always, let's just say it's not the most structured company.
Country
in the world. Yeah, but it's such a fun place from so many different angles. I mean, the food is amazing. The weather is great. I mean, you can immerse yourself both in the Asian part and the European part. I mean, there's so many cool things to see and do in Istanbul, and it's so vibrant. So it's been one of my favorite cities for sure. Let's think what else. I mean, my wife and I, we're big travelers. Yeah, we just came back from Sri Lanka and the Maldives. I'm gonna put the Maldives number two.
Really?
it's just a place where it's almost like, nothing else exists, just you, the water, and the good food that was there.
I asked him about his honeymoon. He said Sri Lanka, it was broken into two parts. And the first part was the adventure, and the second part was the relaxing.
Yeah, the adventure was for my wife because she's such a big, active traveler, and I love her to death. But she made me, hike up to like the highest mountains. And I was with it for a little while, but I reached a personal crisis a few times, and she was just not having it.
The water at the Maldives is gorgeous.
Beautiful, beautiful blue water. You know, the weather is obviously amazing. It's just an island where you do nothing. And, you know, one of my best friends, you know, my best man at my wedding, Marty Bosch, has played at Duke. I mean, that's his destination to go to. He's been there four times. So he told me things to do. Yeah, so
perfect.
It's been a fun time.
All right, Istanbul, Maldives.
Yeah, it's pretty okay. This is going to be a boring one. I'm going to throw one in there.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, but...
Nebraska.
Omaha, Nebraska. No, it's San Francisco.
Okay, I know. It's not a boring one. Come on now.
Yeah, it's a cool place. Just, you know, I have some friends living there. It's like a nice kind of marriage between okay weather and just kind of, you know, it's just a fun city to be in, you know, to be in. Love the water as well. I mean, you know, we don't necessarily have water here in Denver,
right?
I love the ocean.
I was stuck on one of the bridges out there for like 2 hours one time, and it ruined the whole city for
sounds
me
awful.
So I'm with you except for that experience.
Sure.
Kind of ruined it.
Thinking what else. Barcelona was really cool.
Yeah. One place I have been.
Yes, Barcelona was very cool. I was a big fan just because, again, so many things you can do. And, you know, it's a big sports town.
Another gorgeous city, too. I mean,
really is.
Like Istanbul. I mean,
it really is, yeah.
Pretty architecture.
Yes. And
spot left.
You know what country I really loved? It was Croatia. I was there. I was there for maybe for 1 day or 2 days, kind of drove by it. But honestly, I mean, I really want to come back.
What part?
So we actually went, my wife and I went to the European Championship 3 years ago in 2013 in Slovenia, which Slovenia, by the way, is also amazing.
But really?
We flew into, where did we fly into? Wow, it's 3 years ago. I don't remember. But I know we drove.
Zagreb or?
No, actually, we didn't fly into Serbia. I think we flew into, God, I mean, she's going to kill me because I don't know. Anyway, we drove through Croatia.
I want it for the record that one of Tommy's five favorite places, he doesn't remember the name.
Yep. But no, we drove through Croatia. I think we actually landed somewhere else, but we drove through Croatia. And it was amazing. And I know I told myself I wanted to come back and just kind of spend like a week there. And, you know, some of the guys on our staff, they absolutely love, you know, the Balkans. And, you know, I want to come back. That's probably going to be something I want to do.
Well, that's a solid list. You got a little bit of everything there.
Yeah.
You've got islands. You've got the U.S. You've got Europe. So,
yeah.
This is a good variety.
Trying to keep it diverse as much as possible.
Tommy, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate
it. Thanks for having me, Adam.
Really good time. We'll have to do it again before too long.
Absolutely.
All right, everybody. We'll see you again next week.
Thanks for listening to the Pickaxe Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.